Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for March 23rd, 2009, and on this week's episode we have an interview with Walter Stearns from Porchlight Music Theater. Also, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so get ready and let's talk theater.
This is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our guest this week is Walter Stearns, who is the artistic director and the director of Porchlight Music Theater's tremendous production of Pacific Overtures. Hello, Walter.
Hello, Tom. Thank you for your compliment.
Well, it was one of the great nights of theater that I've had this year.
That's beautiful.
And folks, I'll tell you right off the bat, if you want to see a great musical, it's also a great piece of art. Pacific Overtures is the show.
Thank you very much. I'm super proud of it.
So tell us about the show. One of the gutsy things you did right off the bat, besides attempting to mount this on a smaller stage, which, by the way, I think is a great decision because it does work better on a smaller stage, was your decision to have an all-Asian cast.
Yeah, that was the original intention of the writers. They look at Pacific Overtures as if it's from the Japanese point of view, and having actual Asian faces out there telling the story meant so much to us. We worked very hard. We collaborated with Silk Road Theater Company and with some other Asian, sort of local Asian talent in finding an all-Asian American cast to tell this story. I felt it was one of the most important things in telling the show. You wouldn't do Raisin in the Sun with black-faced actors, and you wouldn't tell this very Japanese story with anything less than an authentic face.
Yet so many theater groups attempt to do it with maybe one or two Asians.
Sure.
And I think it loses a lot of the impact.
It's very challenging to find Asian actors who are triple threats. And, you know, even when the show debuted on Broadway in the 70s, Hal Prince, who had, you know, all the money in the world to produce a Broadway musical, he had a terrible time finding an Asian cast because Asians were not training in musical theater at that time. There were so few opportunities for them to work. There were so few of them on stage that they didn't go into this field. And I'd say probably over the last 20 years, there have been more and more Asian actors in training and as actors, singer, dancers, but I don't think that there are that many more opportunities out there, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, let me ask you, why do you think the show only won 192 performances on Broadway? It's got such a great score and a tremendous feel to it.
Yeah, it can be viewed as a very challenging work. I find it to be exotic and beautiful. I think that it really transports me to another place and another time.
Absolutely.
And also, you know, ultimately the show is very political in nature. It has some very strong things to say about imperialism, about Western imperialism, about America and our position in the world. And I'm not sure that a Broadway audience who's more accustomed to looking at commercial musical theater was ready for such a profound political statement.
I agree, and I think as an art form, because it there's a lot of kabuki element to it.
That original production was trying to be kabuki theater on Broadway, and that can be very, very challenging, not only in execution, but also for an audience to fully appreciate, because it sort of stretches reality, and it really, the audience, your imagination, your mind is more engaged in watching a kabuki drama. Our show, our production of Pacific Overtures sort of walks a fine line between a traditional Japanese theater experience and a Broadway musical.
Yeah.
Because that's what our audiences and some of our actors are most
with. Let me say, I think you really achieved that because the early stuff is very much Japanese. The Sondheim wrote the music with those almost atonal style, but yet he found a way of putting melodies and harmonies in it, and those haunting sounds. And then and then going into the funny parts, because this show is very funny, too.
It's satirical. Surprisingly funny. Yeah. I think none of us were prepared for just how historically funny this material is.
Sure, they poke fun at themselves, and of course they're going to poke fun at the barbarians from the West.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. It's a really fun event, and I think it's a very emotional journey. At times, you're choking up with tears and choking up with laughter.
Yeah, yeah. And I must say that musically, I think Eugene did such a tremendous job with it. I mean, what great musicians, and to come up with those exotic sounds that gave you the sense and feel of
I can
Japanese.
Tell you, you know, from our perspective, Eugene has never done better work.
I agree. I told him that, too.
I'm in such awe and appreciation for his contribution to the show. It's like no other musical. It's a personal story for him. He's also Filipino, and he's, you know, Asian American, mm-hmm. and he sort of gets it on a different level than you or I do.
But musically, it is so beautiful. I mean,
it's symphonic and
yes.
magical.
Yeah.
I think when you listen to the singing and the musicians together, it sounds like magic.
Yes, it certainly does. And I know he was very proud. This is everybody's got that show in them that has to come out. And I know he has many, but this one, he said, was very special.
Absolutely. And he's been working on this one. You know, this has been one that's been on our short list to do for so many years. And we've never had the moxie. We've never had the balls to take it on.
Sure.
And this is, it's a challenging work. And we're never, Porchlight's never without ambition. We're a very ambitious
company.
Yeah,
you guys certainly... raise the bar up and keep stretching, and that's what great artists do.
Yeah, we try.
I think the costume and lighting too. I mean, the whole atmosphere when you walk into the theater is amazing.
Well, it really sort of transforms the space and transports an audience to a different place and a different time. Eugene and I were fortunate to travel to Japan last November. And we took in some kabuki theater and no drama while we were there. And you know, just sort of seeing that lifestyle and appreciating that different perspective. And we tried to bring back as much of that as possible.
Well, I'm glad to hear that they're still doing it in Japan. I know they're so westernized.
Yeah, but there's, you know, kabuki theater is still a big tourist draw in Japan.
Okay.
When in Rome, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Did you get some ideas from that helped in this production?
We certainly did. I think the minimalist approach that we're taking, that's certainly derived from some of the no drama that we saw. And then there are moments of sort of great kabuki theater that happen that we said, we've got to do that. We've got to do that because that is kind of the hallmark of what a kabuki theater experience is.
And, give us an example if you can.
Oh, you know, the percussive elements in the
mm-hmm.
show,
okay.
the way that corpses are escorted off stage.
Yeah, they put the black.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Also, you know, in a kabuki theater, they use a fan to be everything. It's mm-hmm. like their everything prop, and it can be everything from a glass of sake to a butterfly to any number of objects. So it's very sort of creative drama.
Yeah, and I never realized that the fans can snap and make that noise, too.
It's pretty thrilling, isn't
it? Yeah, that's so the devil is in the details in shows like this.
It really is.
Yeah.
That's, I've said that to you before,
yes,
but
you have.
We're very careful with that. Our customer in particular, Carol Blanchard, who's done such magnificent work, I know that she's working at the summit of her career right now, and she would settle for nothing less than authenticity in these clothes, in these fashions, and they, I had no idea the detail that she was going into when she took on this project.
And she had several. It's visually a stunning show. And
yes.
It could be done without any music or any lyrics. It'd still be quite
it's
effective.
It's just candy for the eyes.
Yeah,
it's just beautiful.
It sure is. Yes, she did a great job. So you look like you're proud of the show.
I'm super proud of the show.
And
I think it's beautiful.
The so far, I know Hetty liked it, and I liked it quite a
yeah.
bit. And we'll see what everyone else says. But the reaction of the opening night audience was amazing. And talking to some of the younger people and actors who have not seen the show and don't know the show, they were blown away by it.
It's so rarely produced, and it's not only is it an important story, but it's so entertaining. And the music and the comedy.
I was listening to it while I was doing my review this afternoon over and over again. Yeah. And it does haunt you, and it's so strong. Mm-hmm. And all the styles. I mean, he even has a part where he does a patter song that's like a Gilbert and Sullivan.
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm. And there's some John Philip Sousa.
Yeah.
It really sort of reflects the character and the moment and the time. It's as if a Japanese theater company wanted to do a Broadway musical, and that's what he tries to replicate.
Yeah. Do you know in your research how this show, has it been produced in Japan?
It has. It
what
has.
Was the reaction
was very
of the Japanese?
It was a successful production, and that was not a very kabuki-looking show either. It was done by a contemporary director,
okay.
And his production went on to play at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
And then I believe that he remounted it for a Broadway revival with B.D. Wong, that same Japanese director.
Oh, yeah, that's the soundtrack I have of it. Yeah,
it's a terrific soundtrack.
Yeah, it's fabulous, yeah. And I'll tell you what, when I after playing that over and over again before I came to the show, I like to do that if I can to get sort of in the mood for the music, and I'll tell you. Was if I had it on again when Eugene and his orchestra started playing.
Thank you very much. Yeah,
I thought tell us about the cast now. Your leading man. I mean, you did a home run there, a coup with
that. Yeah, we have a sensational actor, David Rhee, playing as a reciter in the show. This is the role made famous by Mako on Broadway, mm-hmm. and later by B.D. Wong in a revival. And you know, he is the real triple threat actor. He came to us straight from doing Thoroughly Modern Millie on Broadway, and he's worked all over the country, and he's performed with Steppenwolf Theater. I think he had a leading role in their Kafka on the Shore
yes,
by
he
Frank
did.
Galati.
Yes, he did. It was very good.
And he's just magnetic on stage. And I have to say that his approach to this role is so refreshing and new and bold, completely unlike any other production I've seen of Pacific Overtures. He's got a certain, you know, there's a youth and an exuberance and an impish, puckish quality to this character.
But he brings it. He brings energy to it, and he engages you right away, which is so important in a musical for you to buy into the story. Once you do, you can go anywhere with it.
Absolutely. And he doesn't fancy himself a dancer, but he is a magnificent dancer.
He's moving great on stage.
His movement on stage really, you know, it contributes so much to the storytelling. Just his gesture and his movement and his physicality makes for, it's like a ballet out there, the work that he's doing.
Yeah, he anchors the show. But boy, he still has some strong supporting characters.
Yeah.
The samurai.
The samurai and the fisherman.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's important to remember that these are all based on historical Japanese people. They're historically based. If you were a child growing up in Japan, you would know this story as well as we
these are real people, real circumstances.
Okay. Kind of dramatized. It's sort of the way that Shakespeare used to write his history plays. He'd take the history of Richard III and he'd make a play out of it. And that's what John Wideman and Stephen Sondheim done in Pacific Overtures. They've taken this national story, the story about the westernization, the story about when Admiral Perry marched onto the shores of Japan, and he's dramatized it. He's given it a very human level, very human interest story.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing that how the Japanese were reacting to it, because it's kind of pokes fun at themselves.
Yeah,
and that's a rare thing for the Orientals to do. That's why I was wondering how that reaction was.
Yeah, because it's a very interesting thing, because they have a certain pride, and they have no tolerance for shame or embarrassment. Those are looked down upon in their culture, and they're very modest and humble people. We were thrilled at our opening performance. We had met representatives here from the Japanese consulate in Chicago.
Oh, okay. What kind
so
of reaction?
We were thrilled.
You?
Oh, they loved it. Yeah. They loved it. And just as I said, they knew these stories going into the theater. They'd never seen them sort of transformed into a musical theater
And
style.
I have a feeling that even if they are diplomats, if they were offended, they would have found a way of leaving. I mean, if it really bothered them.
Sure.
So, great.
They
that's
were
sincere.
Thrilled. And it's... you know, I don't find anything about the show insulting. But
I'm just wondering how the Japanese would react.
How would they would react to it?
Because, you know, Americans are English, Irish, the English-speaking peoples. We like to poke fun at ourselves.
Sure, of course.
But some cultures don't.
Of course.
You know, that's great that it worked that way. Well, some of the young kids that you have in the show have really emerged.
Yeah, these are a lot of young Asian performers who have never really had the chance to star in a show before. You see them on the stages at the Marriott and at Drury Lane, Oak Brook, and all around the city, and they've never had that sort of leading role. And here they are on stage in great leading roles, giving it their all because, you know, this is like the role of a lifetime, the story of a lifetime.
And you know what comes across, the enthusiasm and the respect for the work.
Yeah.
Because a lot of I call it an ensemble piece, really.
It really is.
And because they all do many roles and they, you know, they change costumes and some guys are in drag in some parts of it.
Sure, in a very kabuki way, right?
And they all have to dance and then some of them end up being British sailors doing that great
opening to Act Two, isn't it? Please Hello. It's just the funniest number.
And the song to the geisha.
Pretty lady.
I love that song. Yeah,
just gorgeous and haunting.
Yeah. So these kids, you could tell it was a role. It's a breakthrough role for those.
They really are, and they're giving it their all. You know, a couple of our leading performers, you know, Kent Heine and Danny Bernardo, they perform all around the city, never quite see them.
Yeah,
in
they're
this
ensemble,
light,
and they're terrific
in
ensemble.
This light.
Yeah,
and it's a shame because, you know, everybody's got a story to tell, and these are bright and fabulous talents who should never be held back for any reason. I'm thrilled to give them an opportunity out there. Chip Peos, in particular, Chip's been he's been hoofing it on stages all across the city for years now. And you had no idea the triple threat in this young man. He's a dancer and
what he did with the lion dance was
amazing.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
It was amazing. So there's everything in the show.
I like to think that that's what a musical is. It's everything, you know. It's singing, dancing, acting, drama, design, everything in one terrific event.
Yeah, it's entertaining. It's very funny. It's very oriental. It takes you into this world for a couple hours. You leave wherever you're at.
That's right.
You know, worrying about your job or whatever, and you're in this magical world.
And isn't that what theater is supposed to do?
Yeah.
Right? I love that about the theater.
Yes, yes. And I had a personal story. My computer crashed 2 hours before the show. And I was with my friend, who, you know, we were trying to get it working. And he said, what are you going to do? And I said, you know, I'm going to go forget it. I said, I sure hope Pacific Overture's good because I need to get away. I'm in such an aggravated. 30 seconds into the music, I said, "Wow!" And I never thought about the computer until I landed at my house again.
Well, I was so flattered to hear that.
Yeah, it does what musical theater should do. It also, I know on Broadway, this wasn't a big hit mainly because it was so different and it didn't play to the tourists that come in.
Yeah,
but I think the production you have works so well on the smaller stage that it has a more universal audience.
I think so, too. I think it's just, I love doing these big musicals in an intimate theater. You know, you could go downtown, you could pay a top ticket price to see a Wicked or something like that and sit hundreds of feet away, or you can really have this story, this sort of transformational experience played out right in front of you.
Yeah, inches away, literally.
Inches away, and it's a terrific
and there's no bad sight lines the way you have it set up at the theater building.
It's only four rows. Yeah. How bad could it be?
Yeah, that's true.
You're going to get a great seat anywhere in the space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about the audience now. For those, obviously, who like anything oriental,
absolutely. A must-see. And for anybody who loves a good musical, this is a must-see.
Yeah, I equate it in a way like a nice Chardonnay that it might take a sip or two. But once you get it on your lips, you're hooked.
Yeah.
And I think within the first 5 minutes of this production, you're going to say, wow. And then when you go into it and listen to it, all of a sudden the variety, the haunting songs. You even have the girl doing that's like screeching in the one number, which is very Japanese. it gets a laugh every time.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah, this is a marvelous achievement, and I think anybody, I think it's a good show to introduce even kids to musical
theater.
Oh,
absolutely. We had a couple of kids at our preview, and they were transfixed. We were having such a good time watching these young people
really
completely
absorbed, they didn't move, their heads didn't turn.
It's an exciting story, you know.
Yeah,
it's not just talking heads, you know, it's people in drama and also a lot of fun, you know, costumes and music and dancing.
Yeah, even have a little samurai
sword
play.
There's sword fighting and there's all of this sort of there's martial arts, and that's just a really fun experience.
You are to be commended for producing the show, because this is risky in this time when a lot of people are playing it safe in theater, that you guys stuck your neck way out.
Yeah, it's like I said, we're nothing if not ambitious, and we committed to doing the show so long ago, and by God, we're going to do it, because it's just a dream come true for our little company to take on this material.
Well, I think you have a major triumph on your hands.
Thank you.
And I think as the word gets out, I think this is going to stand up with some of the great stuff you've done. I mean, we go back to Ragtime, which was one of the great productions of that show that just kept going and going. And your Sweeney Todd, which introduced you when you moved up to being an equity company.
It was a huge leap for us.
You really nailed it with Sweeney Todd, and of course Nine and Phantom and your Cabaret.
Oh, thank you very much.
But, and I go back to one of my early favorites you did was Company a few years back.
Yeah,
I hope you're going to think about reviving.
Oh, we'd love to. Yeah. We'd love to. You know, we're getting ready. We're going to be celebrating our 15th anniversary season.
And wow!
I think you're going to see something old and something new in the works.
Good. So you're about. I was going to ask you. You're about at a point where some of the shows you've done in the past, there's been enough distance where, and you guys have grown artistically and grown as a company.
We're a different company today than we were 15 years ago. And, you know, this is our 10th Stephen Sondheim musical, and we'll keep doing them as long as he keeps writing them.
Yeah.
There are only so many that go around.
Well, and, you know, your generation of artists are taking some of his overproduced shows that were, you know, just didn't work for whatever reason. And usually because they were too new for their era, and reinterpreting them and making them successful.
Yeah, I think sometimes his work in particular, Stephen Sondheim's work, is often ahead of its time. And, you know, this Pacific Overture show, which has been around for almost 30 years now, it seems as fresh and new today as it did back then, and certainly as relevant and impactful for an audience.
Nice. And of course, what you guys did with Assassins. I've always hated that show. I still don't like the subject matter.
Sure.
But what you guys did with it, it made it an entertaining, powerful show.
Well, you know, Assassins, not all theater is like a joyous experience. Sometimes
that's
it's
true.
A little distasteful, and sometimes it shakes you up a little bit, and that's what Assassins does for people. It really shakes them up.
But I thought what you guys did with it.
Thank you. That was the work of Michael Weber.
Yeah,
and
Michael
Doug
did
Peck
it. Yeah, they did it.
Did
terrific
a
job.
Terrific job with that show.
Well, so tell us now. Give us a little commercial for when it's running.
Pacific Overtures plays now at the Theater Building now through May 3rd. We perform on Fridays and Saturdays at 7:45 and Sundays at 2:30. For information, you should go to www.porchlighttheater.com. But for tickets, of course, Ticketmaster.com or the Theater Building box office at 773-327-5252.
Great. And you're running till May. You have a matinee, too, don't you? Have a special in April?
We have, of course, every Sunday there's a matinee at 2:30,
and that's
a popular one. And we have a couple of weekday matinees, like a couple of Thursday matinees during the
I saw one April 23rd. I know it was one in here. And But go on the site for
it. Yeah, check out the site.
You know, I wish would happen. Maybe you can tell me if it is happening. I would love to see groups of high school students come
for a couple of matinees or college students
to see the show, because I think they'd learn a lot from it, and it would expand them. Anyone who I played any of the music for, they go, wow. What is that from? They're really moved
by it. It's totally fresh and original, and it's like nothing you've ever experienced at the theater.
Yeah, and So tell us about the last show of your season.
We're coming on to Once on This Island, which is another favorite musical. It's by the team who wrote Ragtime, Stephen Flaherty and Lynn Ahrens. And it's a musical. It's a calypso sort of Caribbean musical. Mm-hmm. The story kind of harkens back to the story of The Little Mermaid. I mean, there's no Little Mermaid in the show, but it's okay. About a young girl who sacrifices for love. And it's also about the gods who sort of manipulate the lives of mortals on Earth.
And, I've not seen the show, but I know the music pretty well.
Wow, you're in for a real thrill. Mark Lococo, who's directing the show, he just opened Wings the other day at Apple Tree.
Fabulous production of Wings.
And he's a magnificent director.
Yes, he is.
He's really transforming this terrific musical into something bold and fresh and something very today. It's like no other production of Once on This Island that's ever been produced.
Wow, that's saying a lot.
Completely original, fresh, new idea and approach to it. Brenda Didier, the award-winning choreographer, you know that this is a big dance piece for us. And she
did a great job with Evita.
She's at the top of her game right now.
Yeah. Wow, so that should be.
Yeah, what a wonderful team. Mark Lococo, Brenda Didier, and Eugene Dazan doing music direction. It's kind of the dream team putting the show together. And that goes up right after Pacific Overtures closes. So we preview, I think, like May 8th or 9th.
Great. And so that'll be coming in spring.
Yeah.
Great. So I understand that coming up soon, you're going to be announcing your new season.
Our new season, our 15th anniversary season.
And like something I said, old, something new.
Something old, something new. You know, okay. we've got a salute to some of the best work that we've ever done. And then we're also, you know, trying out some new directions with the company.
Right.
And I think that one thing I can tell you about the season is that it's very family-friendly. And I think it's going to be one of the most sort of warm and sentimental and fun-loving kind of years we've ever put together. Because this is the time when people want something kind of warm and comforting. And that's what the season's
about. Well,
that
sounds like it could be maybe a little Rodgers and Hammerstein in there. Well, you never know.
You never know. You never know. But you got to know that if we ever took on a Rodgers and Hammerstein, it would be fresh and vital and exactly what you'd want it to be.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that's a great idea because this year with Candide and
these are kind of challenging,
a little slightly edgy, but not good edgy.
Yeah.
And you think in this era that's a good time for that?
I think it's a good time. I think that everybody's going to sort of be embracing the warm and fuzzy. I love the idea of bringing families and children to the theater with you. So mom and dad don't need to find a sitter. They just bring them with you to the theater and open their eyes to some great new experience. And everything we're doing next year is completely appropriate for families and young people. And they're all sort of great introductions to the theater, too.
Great, yeah, because we certainly need that,
yeah,
because we got to get the young people in. And I'm finding out that they're starting to do it musicals that Steppenwolf and Shakespeare are doing for those, you know, the programs they have designed specifically for the high school and the middle school.
Sure.
And I know musical theater is starting to do
that. I think that these titles that are coming up, they're all about, like, parents experiencing this with young people. It's not, you know, we're not, like, playing down to children. We're not doing children's theater. We're not, nothing against children's theater. We love it, and there's a great place for it.
Sure is.
But at the same time, this season coming up is about parents bringing their young people to the theater and giving them an experience that they can share and talk about.
Are you still open to new works?
Yeah, we love to develop new works. They're certainly, they have a longer gestation period, you know, and so it's about nurturing those along over the span of several readings and several years.
Yeah, that's
writers
true.
Have to do rewrites and new drafts.
Yeah, it's tough for a smaller theater company. When the bottom line is important too, to fit those in. I know you fit
that in,
John.
Teapot Scandals.
Dome Scandal. You fit that in with. Didn't you rotate that with Assassin?
That's right. That's right. That was a great little marriage.
Yeah, and it worked well. And it was a terrific piece. Yeah. John's a great writer.
Yeah, and something you probably don't know is that our musical, The Teapot Scandals, became a question on Jeopardy.
Did it really?
Isn't that amazing? Yeah, we were contacted by the Jeopardy writers, and they said, by the way, you'll want to watch on Thursday because the Teapot Scandals is featured as one of the answers on Jeopardy.
Oh, wow. That's a
that's a great claim to fame.
Yeah,
eh?
Well, when that means you're making it when you get to that level. So tell us what some of the future is going to be in general. Some of the,
sure.
the future
well,
will be for your company.
You know, of course, we continue to sort of stretch the musical theater art form and to do great works. I look at every show that we do as like one of the great works. Pacific Overtures is certainly one of the great works.
Sure.
Candide, Once on This Island, Ragtime, they're all really great works of musical theater. And we like to revisit the great works, just as a classical theater company would be doing a Hamlet, because that's a great work.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be doing the great musical theater works in the future. We're also in development with, we have a new musical development arm called Off the Porch.
Oh,
they're
okay.
always working on finding and developing and nurturing new musicals through a series of readings and rewrites and readings and rewrites.
Oh, that's terrific.
Yeah, and eventually we want to have a home of our own. We currently produce at the theater building. We've been here for almost 10 years now, and it's been a great facility for us. And we're getting ready to kind of spread our wings and move into a new home.
Good. Well, we'll stay tuned for that.
I
know there should be something happening with that
in
the near future, which is great. Well, Walter, keep up the good work. And, folks, I really highly recommend Pacific Overtures. It's a beautiful piece of art. It's a beautiful night of entertainment, and it is different. If you've never seen it, you're in for a treat. If you have seen it, you're really going to like this one, because you're going to see a pure version of it with an all-Asian cast, which was great. Congratulations,
Thank
Walter.
You very much.
Thank you, folks. Thanks for listening. And remember, go see a play this week.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of March 23rd, 2009. Broadway in Chicago will present the award-winning A Chorus Line for a limited 3-week engagement from April 14th to May 3rd at Chicago's Ford Center for the Performing Arts, a.k.a. the Oriental Theater. This production recouped its entire $8 million investment after only 19 weeks on Broadway. It broke the theater's box office record 7 times over in its first 5 months. The original production of A Chorus Line opened on May 21, 1975. It won the Pulitzer Prize for Drama, 9 Tony Awards, including Best Musical, and the New York Drama Critics Circle Award. It ran for almost 15 years, closing after 6,137 performances. A Chorus Line still remains the longest-running American musical in Broadway history. Tickets for this production of A Chorus Line are currently available. For more information, click on over to Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. Northlight Theater's Artistic Director B.J. Jones and Executive Director Timothy J. Evans have announced their next season that'll include some appearances from some Chicago-area superstars. The 2009-2010 Northlight season includes Roger Bean's pop musical, The Marvelous Wonderettes, running from September 17th through October 25th. Next will be Stephen Timperley's comedic musical tribute, Souvenir, directed by David Bell. That will be from November 12th through December 20th. After that will be Clifford Odette's Depression-era classic, Awake and Sing. This one is being directed by Amy Morton and will feature Rondi Reed and Mike Nussbaum. That can be seen next January 21st through February 28th. After that will be Hugh Leonard's Irish drama, A Life, directed also by B.J. Jones, and this one will star John Mahoney. That can be seen next March 18th through April 25th. For more detailed information on Northlight's upcoming season, click on over to Theater in Chicago's Theater News website. Don't Dress for Dinner at the Royal George Theater has announced its closing date. Audiences will have until April 19th to catch the hilarious farce before it possibly goes to Broadway next season. The show is enjoying a successful sixth-month run here in Chi-Town, but since all good things must come to an end, so must this. Some special pay-what-you-can dates are coming up that will be easy to see the show at a great price. Read more about all of this on our website. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News podcast. Remember, you can find us here every Monday with more news ready for you to enjoy. So, until next Monday, that is the theater news from Talk Theater in Chicago, and I'm your host, Dustin Moat. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Walter Stearns for giving us the honor of interviewing him this week. I would also like to thank Tom Williams and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And also, I would like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we will be here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next Monday, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to keep talking theater.